Are there some devotees with us this evening that were not with us during the day, earlier today? Okay. Well, too bad. No. I'll try to summarize so that you're a little bit up to speed. We're, of course, discussing the first section, the first major portion of Tattvasandarbha by Jiva Goswami. In this section, it's called the Pramana Kanda, or the section that's aimed, it has an objective. The Jiva Goswami's explicit objective is to establish that of all possible evidences or valid sources of knowledge about Krishna, the best, Srimad Bhagavatam. So he has a very logical, sequential, compelling strategy. One by one by one by one, this domino hits that domino, hits that domino, and he crosses. We're going to cross the finish line this evening. We're going to end this section and start the next section. So, of all the different possible evidences, pramana is a valid source of knowledge or proof. The ways of knowing transcendence the best is shabda, and the Vedas are the best category in the shabda category. Apurusheya shabda, not human source of knowledge, but a transcendental source of knowledge. Apurusheya shabda. The next section, he explains. Takes on the question whether or not included in the Vedas are the Puranas and many evidences, including from the Veda, the Shrutis themselves saying, yes, they're Vedas. Then he takes on the question, well, maybe when it says, Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad says that the Supreme Lord breathed out the four Vedas plus the Itihasas and Puranas. It must mean that those four Vedas include the Itihasas and Puranas because there's different types of Sanskrit, and to be Vedic you have to have this kind of Sanskrit, so it must be within them. And then many references from those Shrutis that say they're the fifth Veda. So then he addresses the question, what's this fifth Veda thing? What does that mean, fifth Veda? And so he addresses that question in a variety of ways. Besides, the Sanskrit is different. They have the same Apurusheya source. And the four Vedas are used in Vedic sacrifices, but those that do the Vedic sacrifices, like in particular the Brahma Yajna, we discussed, we won't go into the details of what that is. It's an essential one of five Pancha Maha Yajna, five essential things that any Vedic Brahmin must do every day, every day, every day, a Brahma Yajna, and reference to the Itihasas and Puranas must be acknowledged to do the Brahma Yajna. So it has to be Vedic. Anyway, many different arguments back and forth dealing with people that have different schools of thought. And so he ends up with the Itihasas and Puranas, they're the fifth Veda, and they're equally as Vedic as the four Vedas, although there's a lot of people out there in the world today and during the time of Jiva Goswami, that at least before reading his writings, they didn't accept that. Maybe not afterwards, they still don't accept it. He makes his proof. Then he says, amongst the Vedas, the Itihasas and Puranas are better. And he gives his explanations why they're better. And then there's other doubts, and he, you know, brings them up and he addresses them, other doubts. And that's where we ended up. And now we're at the final section. And that is that Srimad Bhagavatam, amongst the Puranas, it's the best. Well, there was a prior section. There's a priority or hierarchy of Puranas according to the modes of nature, primarily. And the mode of goodness, compared to passion and ignorance, are best. And Srimad Bhagavatam is not only mode of goodness, but it's Shuddha Sattva, and it represents the mature stage of Vyasa's realization. It's the mature fruit of all the Vedas. The Vedas are compared to a desire tree, commonly. And what's the thing that you want from a tree? You want its fruit. And the Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the tree, the desire tree of the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam can give you anything. You better watch out when you read Srimad Bhagavatam. It helps us, it encourages us, it brings us to the position of improving and elevating our desires to the stage of transcendence. That's what the Bhagavatam does. So, that's where we are. And when you look at the schedule of the verses that we're going to cover in the very back of the verse, I somehow inadvertently just left out verse 22. So you have to adjust the numbering, and we're going to cover a lot of ground this evening. Fasten your seatbelt. I've been trying to go slowly and say things multiple ways, times again and again, so it becomes more clear. Prabhupada said repetition is sometimes necessary for clear understanding. So I've been trying to do that, but I have to move into the fast lane and put on the gas pedal, so because I did the numbering wrong. So we're in the final section, which is Srimad Bhagavatam is established as the topmost of all scriptures. And that ends this section, as you can see. So we'll start with our friend Mr. Purvapaksha. By the way, Purvapaksha, as far as, you know, basically means an opponent may say, an objecting, opposing person may say, something like that, Purvapaksha. Well, you know, even so means, oh, perfect, thank you. Perfect. So, well, all right. You've been pretty persuasive. You know, the Puranas are available in their fullness, and the language is understandable, and they provide a foundation for all the Vedas. In fact, there are statements that say, even if you're very knowledgeable in all the Vedas, you aren't going to have the right conclusion without the study of the Puranas and Itihasas. All right. Okay, so now, even with all of that, comes the question, is there a single standard that can reconcile all these Puranas, which discredit one another with divergent opinions, even when speaking of the same absolute truth? Someone might suggest that the powerful Saint Sri Vyasa wrote the Vedanta Sutra to do just that. Determine the purport of the entire Vedas and Puranas. Therefore, Mr. Purvapakshi will say, one should ascertain the meaning of all these scriptures by referring to Vedanta Sutra. But if you recall, way back in verse number 12, that was discussed. And there's some problems with that, which are the followers of sages who wrote other sutras, like Jaimini and others, Gotama, Vaisheshika, and so forth, you know, they don't accept Vedanta Sutra. And even those that do accept Vedanta Sutra, they interpret in so many different ways and don't agree with each other. So we need something conclusive here. What authority, you know, pramana, that's at the bottom, what authority can truly reconcile all this? So that leads into our final section. That was kind of a summarization, 18.2. Here's 18.3. Does it read 18.3? Yes. It should read 18.3. That's wrong. Jiva Goswami writes, if we can find one scripture that meets the following five criterion, we've got it. Here's the five. It fits the definition of a sattvic purana. If you remember, or at least those of you that were with us, you will recall, Padma Purana details the 18 puranas fall into three modes of nature, 6, 6, and 6 makes 18. So the sattvic puranas are the best, and Bhagavad Purana is more than a sattvic purana. It's a amala purana. That's this reference cited here. Amala purana means spotless purana, means it's not just mode of goodness, it's shuddha sattva purana. So Srimad Bhagavatam qualifies. Then, it has upurusheya authority. Well, Srimad Bhagavatam has upurusheya authority. That's been established. Krishna spoke this knowledge to Brahma. Krishna says that in 11th canto, chapter 20, to Uddhava. At the end of each night of Brahma, in the morning he again speaks to Brahma. He speaks to Brahma. And Brahma teaches it to Narada, Narada, etc. So there's a sequence. But he personally delivers the eternal Vedas to Brahma. So the source is a Purusheya, not a human origin. And the essential ideas of the Vedas, Itihasas and Puranas, are contained therein. And as a reference, 113 Bhagavatam. Nigama kalpataror galitam palam, part of that verse. Shukamutha. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam not only contains the essential ideas, it's the mature stage of those essential ideas. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is being identified. It is based on Vedanta Sutra. And Srimad Bhagavatam is Vyasadeva's personal commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So it's certainly based on Vedanta Sutra. And it's currently available in full on earth, thanks to Sridhar Swami, who very meticulously, personally copied all 18,000 verses and verified this is the authentic version. Very similar as he did with Vishnu Purana. So, he says, he concludes, well said, sir. because you have reminded us about our revered Srimad Bhagavatam, the emperor of all pramanas. Now, there a lot, many, many hours of discussion took place before getting to this stage, but this is now the conclusion. And I appreciated very much what the BBT editors wrote in their commentary, so I'm just going to read it because it's so nice. Faced with the bewildering complexity of the Puranas, the non-linear chronology, cutting across millennia and universes, thousands of prehistoric personalities, and a pantheon of deities, critical scholars most often dismiss the whole body of Puranic literature as an incoherent collection of competing sectarian mythologies. Indologists are free to think in this way if they choose, but in fact, this freedom of judgment is also under the control of material nature. The way in which scholars filter what they see and form their opinions and the influence they have on the public are all part of nature's arrangement for keeping the secrets of transcendence concealed from the intrusion of material intelligence. And so this is now the conclusion of this section. Only by accepting the means of Shabda Pramana on its own terms can anyone begin to penetrate these secrets. Now, what does that mean? You know, in one sense, we don't have to justify Srimad Bhagavatam other than it stands on its own merit. Many things have been said, an additional thing could be said. For example, many of the Puranas stating very clear terms, in fact, that's the next section that's coming up, the best amongst us, all the Puranas, is the Bhagavat Purana. And which one is that? They give its credentials and it's how you identify it, you know, which one amongst us. But we don't need those others to say it stands on its own. Like something like, you know, the light of the sun reveals its own effulgence. Or, you know, you have, you know, in the temple room here's some, you know, what do you call those? Highlights, spotlights, very intense bright light. Okay, that's a very intense bright light. And then look out at the sun. Which is brighter? So you don't have to, like, you know, well, yeah, he's. I acknowledge he's brighter than me. I mean, you don't have to have that acknowledgement. It stands on its own merit. The sun is more luminous. Like that, that's what his conclusion is. So we just now finished the section. Section 2, establishing Srimad Bhagavatam as the supremely authoritative source of knowledge. And let's go refresher time back to the very beginning of what is in the entire six sandarbhas that Jiva Goswami is writing, what's he attempting to do? He's faithful to his line of succession, so he wants to establish that Lord Chaitanya's teachings are the highest. Anyone in any disciplic succession wants to do that. So he wants to do that within his disciplic succession. And he has a strategy. And it's a three-part strategy. The first part is this one. Of all sources of knowledge, Srimad Bhagavatam is the greatest. Second, Srimad Bhagavatam teaches Lord Chaitanya's teachings. And then he gets the conclusion. Lord Chaitanya's teachings are the highest. That's his strategy. He's just completed the first part of his strategy. Now, it was pretty rigorous. And for some of the newer people, you know, it was too rigorous. The crowd thinned out a little bit here. But the audience We've said this multiple times. The audience that he's dealing is not sadhana bhaktas, you know, members of the Hare Krishna movement that are coming to the temple wishing to hear more. He's dealing with people that are out there in Purvapaksha land, and you know, people that have other ideologies, and they have arms across their chest, listening skeptically to Jiva Goswami laying the foundation for why Srimad Bhagavatam is the best pramana. Let's hear your arguments. Bring it on. And it's compelling. He's done that work for that audience. So next, it's still within the Pramana Kanda section, but we're going to go into section 3 of Pramana Kanda, where I changed the language. He has the wrong. Jiva Goswami next is going to what happened here? He's going to establish the that's okay. That's not okay. Somehow these files get all mixed up. So what the next section is, starting with text 19 to 26, the next section is, what is the Srimad Bhagavatam? What are the specifics that are said about Srimad Bhagavatam? What is Srimad Bhagavatam? And the reason he's doing that, you know, for us, we don't have a problem. We know what Srimad Bhagavatam is. You know, call up the 800 number for the BBT or go to krishna.com and search for Srimad Bhagavatam and click and go to Srimad Bhagavatam and give your credit card information and give your address and they send you Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what it is. But there's some other people that think something else out there. And during the time of Jiva Goswami, there were prominent schools that had this idea when Bhagavatam is being glorified by the other Puranas, it's not the Bhagavatam that we know, it's another one. So he's addressing those people. Okay, so we're going to, can you go to the next? Wow, he's fast. Okay. We'll be covering, hopefully, Krishna permitting. Text 19 and 20. Authoritative descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam. What is this best of all evidences that we're calling the Bhagavat Purana or Srimad Bhagavatam? So here's some of the characteristics of that Srimad Bhagavatam. And the first one that he spends time with is Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Now we know from Srimad Bhagavatam how that happened. And I'll just narrate it quickly because most of us already know. Canto 1, Chapter 4, at the beginning, there's a question by the sages of Naimisharanyata Sutta. How did Srimad Bhagavatam appear? So, Sutta answers, Vyasadeva, being a tri-kala-gya, he could see past, present, and future. Kala means time, the three phases of time, past, present, future. He looked into the future, and he saw, yikes, Kali Yuga looks awful. And the people are going to have a really hard time. And one of the features of Kali Yuga is people's memory is very short. And so to help them, I'm going to take that which is not in a written form and write it down, because when you write it down, then you can refer to it again if you have a short memory. So he took the sound vibration form of the Vedas and put it into a written form. And we've been hearing this. He divided into four, and he, what was the other term? Sangship. He condensed from 1 billion verses into 400,000 verses of the Puranas, etc., etc. And he trusted them to different people, different disciples, to look after them and you know, keep them together nicely and maintain them with their disciples over generations. That's what he did. And after completing all that work, we hear from Canto 1, Chapter 4, he then stepped back and looked at the whole thing, and how did it come out? Like we might do, you know, ladies, when you cook, you know, how did it come out after you make the offering? You're really eager to see how people, did they like it? Isn't it? How much did they eat? I go through it all the time. He didn't like my cooking. Anyway. Or, you know, an artist, or, you know, like the devotee, Madhupati, all the money that was spent to renovate this place. You know, you make plans, you call Pavlikshin, his team, get out there, and they, you know, do a lot of work, and this and that, the heating system, and like, you know, gobs of money. And so then how did it come out? Or, you know, they dress the deity, and after you address the deity, you step back, and you get the idea. So he's a literary person. Afterwards, he stepped back, and how did it come out? It didn't feel right. Something's missing. We all know that feeling. And so he wanted Narada to explain to him, you know, what did I miss? So Narada came just at that, right in the nick of time. And Narada explained to him, you didn't sufficiently glorify the personality of Godhead. So you should write another literature. You take this Srimad Bhagavatam, that's one of the Puranas, and just go into trance, samadhi, fix your mind upon the personality of Godhead, the absolute truth, and this, the knowledge that's revealed to you. Then compose such literature just about the personality of God and forget the other stuff. You know, you did that. You did fine with the other stuff. You know, how people can find the necessities of material requirements through Vedic sacrifices. Don't even deal with it. Just glorify the personality of Godhead. That's the ripened fruit. So then he recomposed in 18,000 verses this Srimad Bhagavatam. And part of it is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, which was his composition. It's his treatise describing the Upanishad section of the Vedas that he compiled. Then he explained them or summarized them in Vedanta Sutra, and Srimad Bhagavatam was its commentary. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary. That's exactly what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. I'll read. Indeed, Lord Vyas was not satisfied even after completing all the Puranas and the Vedanta Sutra. He therefore wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, which was revealed to him in trance as the natural commentary on his own sutras. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we find the consistent reconciliation of all scriptures. That the Bhagavatam gives the essence of all scriptures is shown by its opening with the Gayatri Mantra. He doesn't recite the Gayatri Mantra. He mentions the word Dhimahi. We'll see that in a moment. Wherever this word Dhimahi is there, it has a specific connotation. It alludes to, it's appropriate for, in conjunction with Gayatri. You know, think of The word meditation in English, how many words are there in Sanskrit to indicate meditation? You know, in the Ashtanga Yoga system, there's three right there. Dhyan, Dharana, Samadhi. And there's many others that indicate you meditate on something. Dhimahi has a particular function or connotation. It's in relation to Gayatri. And Gayatri is very important within the Vedas. So here we see Narada coming to the ashram of Vyasa and instructing Vyas what to do to prepare this Srimad Bhagavatam. So our understanding, of course, from the Bhagavatam, but other sources have said the same thing. This Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not creative writing 101. It's Vyasa's realization of transcendental knowledge, eternal aporusheya knowledge, and it just became manifest, and he wrote it down. Now, this word Brahma Sutra, this title of this book, it's the same as Vedanta Sutra. It's the same thing, just two terms for the same thing. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasa's commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Vyasadev delivers the complete and unambiguous meaning of Gayatri in the opening verse, 1.1.1. Now, you see here there is a reference to Paramatma Sandarbha, number 105. Paramatma Sandarbha is the third of the Sandarbhas, and in that text 105, it has about 160 subtexts to that 105. It's pretty long. And those of you that registered and left an email address, I'm going to send out to you, or have it sent out to you, that section from 105 that deals with Jiva Goswami explaining in Paramatma Sandarbha in a way over your head kind of language thing, the explanation of how it is that 1.1.1 Bhagavatam explains or is a commentary on Gayatri Mantra. And that's only like, you know, a quarter of what that 105 is. The first part, he gives an explanation of 1.1.1 of how it explains the first five verses of Vedanta Sutra, word by word and concept by concept. And then, after that, he goes through the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam and how 1.1.1 deals with the 10 subjects of Bhagavatam. And that's one verse out of, like, you know, 110 of one of the sections of Paramatma Sandarbha that's one of six. Where do you get this in your email box? You know, just, you know, the Bhagavatam 1.1.1 is a commentary on Gayatri Mantra. If you can figure it out, you're really scholarly. I spent a whole bunch of time this afternoon, and there's a hole in my head from how many times I was scratching my head. In the handout, this, those of you that registered got one of these. And inside here, there's Jiva Goswami's commentary, translation of, in English, of Jiva Goswami's commentary on some verses from Agni Purana that explain Gayatri Mantra. And that's very understandable. I mean, reasonably understandable. Because it's the text, and then his commentary on the text. So it starts on page 16 and goes through page 24. Look at it later. And I'll just summarize in really simple language. Gayatri, in this world, he even identifies in his commentary, in this world, there's a lot of different ideas out there on what is Gayatri a meditation upon. Some people think it's meditation upon the sun. Some people think it's meditation upon fire, Agni. Some people think it's meditation upon Brahman. And he's very, very clear with compelling logic, and he keeps saying it. This is very clear. No, it's a statement of Agni Purana, and he doesn't even give, in some cases, much commentary because it's very clear, at least to him. Step by step by step, Gayatri Mantra is meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. Not Krishna, specifically, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. By that distinction, I mean, just like in the sequence of the Sandarbhas, we're covering Tattva Sandarbha. Following that is Bhagavat Sandarbha. It's a concept of the Supreme is a person. The source of everything is a person who has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. That's Bhagavan. The next is Paramatma. Using Radhika Raman's language, the features of Bhagavan, you shrink them a little bit. You know, like Vishnu has 60, not 64 of the qualities. So he deals specifically with matters of creation, you know, material nature and conditioned souls and time and stuff like that. That's Paramatma feature. And then that supreme, that the fourth Sandarbha is Krishna is that supreme. So before we get to Krishna as the supreme, he's stating in this little section that you have in your handout that it's the Bhagavan feature of the supreme that's the object of meditation, of Gayatri. One can also meditate on the effulgence of the supreme, just like we discussed this. When you look at the full moon, you're seeing the effulgence of the full moon when you see the full moon. You're not just looking at the effulgence, you're looking at the full moon and the effulgence of the full moon. So the jyoti, without going through the language right now of Gayatri Mantra, the language of Gayatri Mantra mentions effulgence, but effulgence of what or of whom? Meditation is upon Bhagavan, the Supreme Person, who has effulgence, he is effulgent, his abode is effulgent, he's the source of material creation, he's the source of everything. Gayatri is a meditation upon Bhagavan. So that's what you'll find in Jiva Goswami's language from Agni Purana. And then when I send you this handout, not a handout, this mail out of a number of verses from Paramatma Sandarbha, essentially that's the message also. It's a little more complex. And Srimad Bhagavatam 111 makes it very clear. It's making a commentary on Gayatri. What is it upon which Gayatri is meditating? It's Bhagavan. So, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Here's that word, Dhimahi, indicating Gayatri. And Gayatri is meditating upon Satyam Param. What's Satya means truth. And Satyam Param is the supreme truth. So what's the supreme truth? Bhagavan. There's three features. Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. So Bhagavan is the basis and support of the other two. Aham, Pratishto, Aham. Brahmano hi Pratishtaham. There we go. Anyway, Gayatri Mantra is a meditation upon Bhagavan, and Jiva Goswami is writing here that the Bhagavat Purana make commentary on Gayatri Mantra as well as Vedanta Sutra. It's a meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is the highest dharma, Satyam Param. A little mixed up. This just says that this is detailed in Paramatma Sundarbha 105. Not only the Gayatri part, but the Vedanta Sutra part, and as well as the 10 subjects of the Bhagavatam part. Interesting reading. So next, 19.2, it begins a series of verses, and I'm going to, because of time, I'm going to try to go through them relatively quickly. Please forgive me. At the end, we're going to summarize. I'll tell you where we're going. There will be 9 different elements that other Puranas say about Bhagavat Purana. And Devi Bhagavat has 5, but not the other 4. That's where we're going. And it's very interesting, especially the other 4. Okay, so here we go, 19.2. The characteristics of Srimad Bhagavatam are further described in the Matsya Purana. Quote, that Purana is known as Srimad Bhagavatam, which, oh, here's one of them, explains the topmost principles of religion with reference to the Gayatri Mantra. That's 1. 2. And which tells of the killing of Vritra. So does Devi Bhagavat. And in the first verse of Devi Bhagavat, there's a Dhimahi mantra. There's a Gayatri mantra, first verse. Okay, next. This Purana has 18,000 verses. Devi Bhagavat has 18,000 verses. Whoever writes out a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam places on a golden lion throne and presents it to someone in the full moon day of the month of Bhadra, that's August, September, will attain the supreme goal. Well, you know, Devi rides on a lion. A golden lion. It's Devi Bhagavat, for sure. Just read what it says in Matsya Purana. It's the best. Now, he goes on further in 19.2 that this Gayatri Mantra has a very special place in all of the Vedas, so special that Gayatri Mantra is said to be the mother of all the Vedas. And the Vedas are the mother of knowledge, right? She's the mother of all mothers. She's Adi Mother, Adi Mata. And the reason given in Rig Veda is from the syllable Om, Gayatri has expanded. And then Gayatri, from Gayatri come all the other Vedic mantras, so she's the mother of the Vedas. Now, Gayatri mantra comes, it's one of many. We discussed it before. I forget the exact term. Chandahas, is that it? Chandahas. It's a category of, Prabhupada has translated as hymns from the Vedas. But Gayatri is one of them. In fact, she's the mother of all of them. And Gayatri mantra is the summation of all the Vedic knowledge in one mantra. So it's really important mantra. And if you want to know what that really important mantra is, read Srimad Bhagavatam, because it explains what it is. In fact, you just read first verse. A little help from Jiva Goswami and Agni Purana and the attachment that's in the handout that you got. So, this Gayatri mantra from the Rig Veda, there's 24 syllables divided into three sections, 8 each. And it's not okay. Well, it's okay, but there's a verse which says in Padma Purana, you can go in a book, read Gayatri Mantra, and go to your heart's content and chant Gayatri Mantra, but you're not going to get any phala or fruit from that. In fact, it's not even supposed to be uttered aloud. So, rather, the Padma Purana verse that's quoted in Hari Bhakti Vilas also, and many places in Prabhupada's teachings, Sampradaya Vihina Ye Mantras Te Nishpala. Pala and Nishpala. Fruit and no fruit. It is understood that whatever mantras you might chant will be fruitless if they have not been received through a bona fide sampradaya. So, become initiated. Initiated means, diksha means, giving of mantra. That must be received in that way. Now there's a little section where the word dhimahi is explored. Jiva Goswami says, well, let's do this right because it shows first. This is a cover of a book by Sridhar Swami called Bhavarta Dipika. And you'll see this image a number of times because I couldn't find a better one. Bhavarta Dipika is Sridhar Swami's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. Here it gives the period of his life. I showed in contrast he came a little after Madhvacharya, but before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he came from a different sampradaya than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Madhvacharya. He came from the Vishnu Swami line, or sampradaya. And as I mentioned, he was a very ardent Nrisimha Bhakta. But he... So we'll hear... Oh, I'll mention it. Like Madhvacharya, Bhavarta Dipika was written... Sridhar Swami was interested... He had a strategy that goes like this. And it's in your... Something that's in your... handout book also. Shankaracharya was very, very popular. Immensely popular. And whatever he did and said, people paid attention to. His incarnation of Lord Shiva, people paid attention to him. And he, one of the literatures he did not comment on was Srimad Bhagavatam. Purposefully, but what he did do instead was he wrote a set of 8 poems that glorify Krishna with pastimes that are exclusively found in Srimad Bhagavatam, which means he read it, because otherwise he wouldn't know about the pastimes, and then he wrote poems glorifying Krishna. Govindashtaka. Govinda, Krishna. Herding the cows, Krishna in Vrindavan, with pastimes exclusively. So, after, he didn't comment because he didn't want to, you know, touch, but he wanted to respect Krishna. In his line, following him, some of his followers thought, oh, this, maybe we can adopt this and make it part of our doctrine. So they started making commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, one fellow, whose name I can't remember, he wrote a commentary. Fortunately, it was lost. One of those percentage of things that got lost. It got lost. But Sridhar Swami had a strategy. Well, these followers of Shankaracharya, they think it's supposed to be one of their teachings, so I'm going to write a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. That's a Vaishnava commentary, but if it's like too Vaishnava-like, they won't even pay attention to it. So he allowed, purposefully, some portions, but they're particularly in the 11th canto, the Navayogendra portion, and there's some other portions where, gee whiz, it looks like he's supporting Mayavad philosophy. It was a strategy. And Jiva Goswami accepts him as a perfect Vaishnav. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted his commentary as the commentary to follow. He chastised Ballabha in thinking, I'll write a better commentary. So Jiva Goswami, following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, makes reference again and again to Sridhar Swami's commentary. And Sridhar Swami makes a commentary on 111 Bhagavatam in his Devarta Bhavarta Dipika. And there he comments that the Gayatri mantra found in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam 111, that the Gayatri phrase indicated by the word Dhimahi begins this Purana. It shows that this work has the nature of Brahmavidya. What's Brahmavidya? It's transcendental knowledge, or knowledge of transcendence. Specifically, Gayatri. It's commentary on Gayatri. So since the Bhagavatam is based upon Gayatri, which is, you know, the mother of all the Vedas, naturally, Srimad Bhagavatam explains the topmost principles of religion. And verse 1.1.3 says it. Nigama kalpataror galitam palam is the ripened fruit. Galitam palam. Satyam param dhimahi. Okay? So this phrase, satyam param dhimahi, going forward now into 19.3, Jiva Goswami makes reference to something that was quoted in text 18, a Matsya Purana verse, where the word Gayatri is also mentioned as, you know, one of the qualifications of Bhagavatam. It includes the word Dhimahi. Dhimahi, Jiva Goswami says, it is an indicator, similar to what Sridhar Swami says. As soon as you see the word Dhimahi, oh, that means Gayatri. Or it's implying the purport of Gayatri. And Srimad Bhagavatam begins in that way. Now comes a little of the details of 111 Bhagavatam, where Jiva Goswami writes this beginning phrase, Janmad Yasya Yataha, which, by the way, is the first sutra of Vedanta Sutra. It's 1.1.1 Vedanta Sutra. It's 1.1.1 Bhagavatam. No coincidence. He's explaining, Vyasadeva in the Bhagavatam is explaining Vedanta Sutra. But it also connects with Gayatri. How's that? A little technical. And I want to get through verse 20, so I can't do what I've been doing. I can't, like, and, you know, go slowly. I'm going to have to keep going. Sorry. This Janmad Yasya Yataha, the connotation of it is Janma is birth, like Janmastami, the birth of Krishna. So Janma Adi, Janma Adi, beginning with creation, etc. and so forth. So creation, maintenance, and destruction. Krishna is the source of everything, creation, maintenance, and destruction, or his expansions as the Purusha avatars, which are expansions of Krishna. They're the Janma Adi. they are, by him, this universe is created, maintained, and destroyed. And Tene Brahma Hrida is in that 111. That's Hrida means heart. And Brahma received this knowledge within his heart, which is in 111, and it corresponds with a phrase in Gayatri. And those of you that are second initiated, or not second initiated, just were born in India and grew up with people that recite Gayatri all the time. Dio yo na prachodayat, which is this, he who inspires everyone's intelligence. Dio yo na prachodayat. He who inspires our intelligence corresponds with, so that Gayatri phrase corresponds with Tene Brahma Hrida. Krishna inspired the intelligence of Brahma. And if we absorb ourselves properly in the sound vibration of Bhagavatam, same potentially can happen with us. Tene Vishnudas Hridaya. Tene Jamuna Jivana Hridaya. Etc. Krishna can inspire from within your heart the realization of the absolute truth. That potential is there through connecting with sound vibration. As is the message of Gayatri, one who meditates on Gayatri. Jiva Goswami goes on, in the Bhagavatam's own words, dharma prodita kaitavotra parama. That is, paradharma is being presented in the other Kaitava dharma kind, or cheating propensity kind, they're kicked out. So Bhagavatam is propounding the highest truth, the highest dharma. That's this thing at the top, satyam param dhimahi. The dhimahi, the Gayatri meditation is on the highest truth, the highest dharma. Okay, now comes a bunch of information. So I think I'm going to go a little slower with this one because it's a bunch of information. Or maybe I'll just say it and you can come back and look at it later. What this slide does is what is summarized in the handout book. You know, Jiva Goswami's commentary on Agni Purana's explanation of how 111 Bhagavatam explains Gayatri Mantra. That's what this one slide does. And you can have a whole course just on that. I mean, Satchinandan Swami wrote a whole book on it. You know, so we're doing it in one slide, and it's information overload, and don't worry about it. Hare Krishna. This is a direct quote from Paramatma Sandarbha, that nice piece of literature I'm going to send to you at the end of the course. We should hold in mind, dhimahi, that the supreme varanyam, these are words in Gayatri Mantra, the supreme abode, varanyam bhargo, of Vishnu Savitur Devasya. He's helping us understand the words of Gayatri Mantra. How are we to fix our meditation when we're chanting Gayatri Mantra? So next time, those of you that are Gayatri initiated, you'll realize, wow, we really not properly fixing our mind on the meaning of the Gayatri. We're just making the sound vibration in our mind, but what's the meaning? So May Bhargas, or the Lord, Yaha, inspire the intelligence of all living beings. Na Dio Prachodayat. May Vishnu, this is how he writes his commentary, sort it out. May Vishnu, who also has the forms of the sun and Agni, inspire the intelligence of all enjoyers of their karmas, both visible and invisible. Whew. What was that? Gayatri Mantra. So there, some of the words in Gayatri Mantra that correspond with 1.1.1, Bhagavatam, the Gayatri Mantra begins with Om, the Bija Mantra, and that Om corresponds with two things, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Unto whom is Om referring? It's Vasudeva, Krishna. Om. Or, Paramatma Sundarbha says, also the phrase, Janmad Yasya Yataha. What's that? That's the absolute truth. The absolute truth is Bhagavan Krishna. Janmad Yasya Yataha, within that phrase. Okay, then next, Bhur, Bhuva, Svar. These indicate, the three planetary systems. Of the upper planetary system, there's Bhulokar, Bhuvarloka, and Svargaloka. So there they are. Those three correspond, from Gayatri, correspond with these statements found in 1.1.1 Bhagavatam. Trisargo Amrsha. In Paramatma Sundarbha, he said, both deal with creation and the phases of creation. So they correspond. And Savitur Varenyam Bhargo. I mean, he has multiple readings. And if you read very carefully in the handout that's in your little booklet here, this one, he does a whole bunch of things with Bhargo. He says, that's the main meditation. And Bhargo can mean this, that, and the other thing. Ultimately, it means Vishnu, or means Bhagavan. Bhargo. Now, Bhargo literally means effulgence. But he says, the best of all effulgence, the Varenyam is the best of effulgence, is the Lord's abode. And guess what? In the Lord's abode is the Lord. Because that's what it means, his abode. Like the palace of the king. Guess what? The king's in his palace. That's why he called it the palace of the king. Now, Krishna Loka means Krishna in his abode. So, Varenyam Bhargo is the worshipable effulgence of the abode of the Lord. And that means, implies the Lord. This Sanskrit word, Savitur. Savitur means the sun. And he goes through his whole explanation in the handout that you have. The sun, from whence does the sun derive its power for illumination? From the Supreme. If you read Brahma Samhita, it's very clear. The sun derives its power from the Supreme, Govinda. So actually it's not meditation upon the sun, as some people say, Gayatri is a worship of the sun. It's worship of the person from whom the sun derives his power. Which is the message of Gayatri, which is the message of the Vedas. Someone may worship the sun, someone may worship the demigods. But from whom do the demigods derive their power? That's the absolute truth. The Vedas are revealing the absolute truth. Gayatri is also. The Bhagavatam is just doing it very explicitly. The terms for Gayatri for Bhagavatam is Dhamna Svena. Dhamna, that's his abode, his Dhamma, and Sva, his own abode. Bhagavatam is meditating very clearly on Krishna in his abode. And Gayatri is saying, Savitur Varenyam Bhargo. It can be confusing or indirect, or as we saw that little quote where 11th canto, chapter 3, it says, the shrutis are often indirect. Remember that discussion? And when somebody says something indirect, you're puzzled. Do you mean this or that or the other thing? Can you say it directly, please? So, well, I don't like to say things directly because I didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. So I say things indirectly. They're puzzled even what I'm meaning. Anyway, the Bhagavatam is very direct. Dham nasvena. And the Gayatri is Savitur Varenyam Bhargo. You need, you know, Jiva Goswami to help you unpack it, what it's being said. And Devasya Dimahi. So Devasya literally means divine. And in the the Bhagavatam, it's Svarat. Svarat means transcendentally independent. Now, those of you who have been around the Hare Krishna movement for a little while, you know there's only one person that's transcendentally independent. And it's not Bhakta so-and-so. It's Krishna. Only he is transcendentally independent. And everything else is dependent on him. There's one absolute truth from which everything else comes. This Janbad Yasya Yataha. He is Swarat. Or Devasya Dimahi. Gayatri, the mother of the Vedas, is having us meditate on the divine Devasya Dimahi, absolute truth, who is a person, Bhagavan. Okay, I'm going to move on because we have to finish our... Those of you that have received Gayatri Mantra, I invite you to read that section a few times so that you're a little more aware of what we're chanting when we chant Gayatri. It's because, according to Hari Bhakti Vilas, when chanting mantra, you should know, or you should meditate upon the meaning of the mantra that you're chanting. So, and if you have the book, you can go through this section, and you can go to the Sarva Samvadini, and when I, so take some time, when I send this little material out from Paramatma Sandarbha 105, go through it, scratch your head, but you get an idea of what it is that we're to be meditating upon when we're chanting Gayatri Mantra. Now you can keep it really simple, and it's the supreme somehow. I don't exactly know how this puzzle part fits together with that puzzle part, but it's meditation on the supreme somehow. So that's a good beginning, but then it's meant brahminical. Work is refined and finer, and then it will help you. Prabhupada said like this, and it's true. It will help you chant the Hare Krishna mantra better. And when by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra better, it will help you chant the Brahma Gayatri and the other Gayatri mantras better. And by the way, the realization of Brahma to give us the Vedas was from chanting his tapa was chanting Gayatri mantras that he received from Krishna. It's very explicitly stated in Brahma Samhita. So Gayatri Mantra chanting is very important, and it's very important you know what you're chanting when you're chanting. Your meditation is dhimahi, it's fixed in the right way. So we're going to move on to text 20. My apology, I have to move quickly just to cover the material. So some scholars of Jiva Goswami's time held that Devi Bhagavat rather than our Srimad Bhagavatam was actually the Bhagavatam glorified in the other Puranas. There she is, Devi Bhagavat. And When some of those traditional scholars read the Puranas, this passage from Matsya Purana, that on a FOMO night in the month of Bhadra, you place the Bhagavatam on a golden throne. Well, they don't say golden throne. It's like it's Hema Simha. You know, Simha means lion. And Hema Simha is a golden lion. There she is. She's riding on a golden lion. It's Devi Bhagavat. But there's things, other places you'll see in this list of nine items, that it's not Devi Bhagavat. Rather, the Hema Simha means a golden throne. You know, like Simhasana. Simhasana. The lion throne. Right? Okay. So in both of these Puranas pictured next, over here, the Skanda Purana and Agni Purana, they say the very same thing in the same Sanskrit. And here's what they say. The Purana, known as Srimad Bhagavatam, recounts the deeds of humans and demigods in the Saraswat Kalpa. Devi Bhagavat doesn't do that. It explains the supreme religion in terms of Gayatri. Well, it does that. And narrates the slaying of Ritrasura. It's a different narration than Srimad Bhagavatam's, but it does that. It has 18,000 verses. Devi Bhagavat has 18,000. And whoever writes a copy of the Bhagavatam, places it on a golden lion throne, presents it to someone in the full moon night of the month of Bhadra, attains the supreme destination. They both say the same thing. So this one that's in red there, that's something that Devi Bhagavat doesn't have. And then here's another very nice reference. We'll just say, who is this? Here's a human body and a horse's head. Dadichi. Who are these two? Ashwini Kumaras. I'm going to narrate this story. In case you don't know the story. Yet another Purana, this is from Sridhar Swami, he doesn't say which one, but you know, authoritatively we accept it, Jiva Goswami accepts it. The Purana, known as Srimad Bhagavatam's 18,000 verses, divided into 12 cantos, there's another 12 cantos, begins with Gayatri, both begin with Gayatri, describes the Hayagriva Brahmavidya. Hayagriva Brahmavidya connected with the slaying of Ritrasura. Okay, so now story time. Hayagriva Brahmavidya. Well, let's just, before we go here, in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, Indra does a few boo-boos. Indra got all puffed up and had a big festival for himself in Indraloka. And the spiritual master, Brihaspati, came in, and Indra was so filled with himself, he didn't even notice that Brihaspati came in, didn't offer him respect or anything. And Brihaspati could understand, he's in Maya. And he just walked out. He left. He not only left the festival, he left. And when the festival was over, his wife said, did you notice that Brihaspati came in and then he left? Oh, really? Why didn't you tell me? Well, you were too filled with yourself. So he panicked and he started looking for Brihaspati. Couldn't find him anywhere. And he had one of his uh-oh experiences. He had offended his spiritual master just by not paying attention to him in the proper way. And the daityas, bad news spreads fast. Somebody has a problem and everybody knows about it somehow really fast. They didn't even have, email and text messages. They just found out right away. no Facebook and nothing like that. They just went over to the Daitya community, and Shukracharya, their spiritual master said, "Hey guys, Brihaspati's gone. All their power comes from Brihaspati and he's gone. You know what that means? Get your weapons, guys." So they got their weapons and they took over Indra's kingdom. Real easy. And Indra, you know, started crying. "I lost my kingdom." So he then, they went to Lord Brahma. Brahma scolded him, said, "You know, Indra, when are you going to learn? You keep doing this thing." But I'll tell you what, I'll give you a solution. You can go to, what's the priest's name? Vishwaroop. Vishwaroop is really qualified. He knows lots of mantras. And he'll give you a mantra that can protect you, and you can go back and fight Indra and you can win. Go to Vishwaroop. He's the son of Tushta. He's really qualified. So Indra went to Vishwaroop. Vishwaroop was very reluctant. He gave his reasons why he was reluctant, but he then solved the reasons for, you know, that were preventing him, and he became their Purohit. The priest that did yajnas for them. So he showed Indra how to do Narayana Kavacha, how to protect himself by mantra, touching different parts of his, like we do with Tilak. Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayanaya Namaha. Don't just, you know, smear something. Say the mantra, because it's the mantra and you're touching the parts of the body that give protection to the body. That's what Narayan Kavacha is. Names of Vishnu, touching different parts of the body, so he was protected. And we went back into the battle, and he defeated the Daityas. So he was feeling happy again. Notice, happy, unhappy, happy. And then he gets unhappy next. It happens like that. So Indra realized, "Wow, Vishwaroop's really good. What other mantras do you know?" "I know Soma Rasa." "Oh, great, Soma Rasa mantra. Yeah, let's have some Soma Rasa yajnas." And so he did. He performed Soma Rasa yajna, but Vishwaroop's mother was from the Daitya side. So he did all the mantras. Indra didn't know all the mantras. He knew the mantras, and it included giving some of the Soma Rasa to his mother's relatives. Indra found out, "What? You're doing Soma Yajna and you're giving Soma Rasa to the Daityas?" He took his sword and cut off his head. Actually, he had three heads. He cut off his heads. Temper tantrum. He cut off his heads of a brahmana. Big problem. Murderer of a brahmana. His priest. The father of Vishwaroop, his name is Tushta. There's many other details. Tushta performed a yajna to create a demon that would kill Indra. But he got one syllable wrong. So instead of creating a demon that would kill Indra, he created a demon that would be killed by Indra. One syllable wrong. Indra Chatro instead of Shindra Chatroho. Makes a big difference. So the demon that was created was Vritra. Mentioned. Vritra. And Vritra came and, you know, huge, big creature, fierce looking, big trident, roared so loud that mountains would fall over. And he came charging to destroy the demigods. And they ran for their lives. He told them, stand and fight. Don't run for your life. Anyway, so many things happened. So, Indra went to battle. He threw his club at Indra, at Vritrasura. Vritrasura caught it with his two fingers. He took the club and smashed Indra's elephant, knocked his elephant on the ground. Indra looked up at Vritrasura, trembling. And Vritrasura spoke transcendental knowledge to Indra. So Indra didn't know what to do. He had gone to Vishnu. Actually, this is in between. He went to Vishnu. Help! What to do? This terrible. Indra said. Vishnu said. Go to Dadichi. He's very generous, very, very magnanimous Brahmana. Ask Dadichi for his bones. Ask Dadichi for his bones. And he'll give you his bones. And when you get his bones, you take his bones to what's the architect of the demigods? Vishwakarma. Take the Vishwakarma and he'll fashion you a thunderbolt. With that thunderbolt you can deal with, you can kill Vritra. So this Dadichi, that same Dadichi, same person, very magnanimous Dadichi, he had Brahmavidya. Brahmavidya means transcendental knowledge. So these two Ashvini Kumaras, they're physicians in the heavenly realm. They went to Dadichi and said, can you give us Brahmavidya? He said, sure. But I'm occupied right now. You come back later and I'll give you Brahmavidya. So they went away. Thank you. We'll be back in a while. Meanwhile, Indra heard. Dadichi's going to give him transcendental knowledge. So Indra came to Dadichi and said, don't give them transcendental knowledge. If you do, I'll cut off your head. But he's a Brahmin. He's given his word. So the two Ashvini Kumaras come back and say, okay, we're ready for Brahmavidya. Can you give us Brahmavidya? He said, well, there's a problem. Indra just came and threatened me. He said, if I give you Brahmavidya, he's going to cut off my head. And they said, no problem. We're royal physicians. Here's our suggestion. We'll cut off your head, put on a horse's head, and through the horse's head you can give us Brahmavidya. When Indra comes and cuts off the horse's head, he'll put back on the other head and you'll be fine. And he said, fantastic, let's do that. So there's Dadichi with a horse's head giving Brahmavidya to the two brothers, the twins, Ashvini Kumaras. So now, in the next slide, Jiva Goswami explains the Hayagriva Brahmavidya mentioned in this previous verse, meaning the doctrine of the Supreme, Brahmavidya, taught by Hayagriva, is the Narayana Varma, which Vishvarupa also gave, Narayana Varma, to Indra. It's protection by Narayana. Since it is narrated in the same context with the killing of Vritra. In other words, in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Vedas, there's a number of different Hayagrivas. So you have to get the right one. It's the Hayagriva that isn't in the Devi Bhagavat, where Dadichi gives transcendental knowledge to the Ashwini Kumaras. It's not mentioned in the Devi Bhagavat. It is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, here's the reference. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, Verse 52. And we're going to see the Sanskrit in just a moment. He who has the name Ashva Shira. Stay tuned, we'll go through the detail. Sridhar Swami, bless him, or he's blessing us. He gives this commentary on this section of the Bhagavatam, where we get further confirmation that the Narayana Varma is in fact a standard teaching of Brahma Vidya. Quote, upon hearing this and feeling honored, Dadichi, anxious not to break his promise, instructed the twin Ashwini Kumaras in the knowledge of Pravarga sacrifice and Brahma Vidya. Let's see here. Yeah. Okay. There's some slides that are missing here. There's some slides that are missing. I don't know where they are. Oh, well. Carry on. 20.4, because the time is moving. Since Srimad Bhagavatam is pleasing to the Supreme Lord and his devotees' favorite book, it is the supremely sattvic scripture, as stated in the Padma Purana, in Gautama Rishi's question to Maharaj Ambarish. So Gautama Rishi is speaking with Ambarish Maharaj, who is a Krishna Bhakta. Ambarish Maharaj is not only a Vaishnava, he's a Krishna Bhakta. The advice in Padma Purana is, O Lord of the earth, do you recite, this is speaking to Ambarish, he's the emperor of the world, do you recite Bhagavat Purana before the deity of Lord Hari, especially the history of king of the demons, Prahlad Maharaj? So this is, you know, this is Sattvic Purana, not Devi Bhagavat. It's not a Sattvic Purana. What's a Sattvic Purana? It glorifies Vishnu or Hari. You with me? Bhagavat Purana is identified as a Sattvic Purana. That is, it glorifies the deity of Hari. And then again, another reference. Gautama further instructs Ambarish in the section glorifying, you know, he was observing Ekadasi and breaking Ekadasi on Dvadasi, and he's instructing him how to do it. One should stay awake throughout that night, the Ekadasi night, and hear scriptures that narrate stories of Lord Vishnu. Well, that's not Devi Bhagavat. And his devotees, especially Bhagavad Gita, the thousand names of Vishnu, and the Purana narrated by Shukadev. Devi Bhagavat is not narrated by Shukadev. So there's some places that overlap and some that don't. So which one is the real Devi, which one is the real Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavat Purana? They both may stand up, but only one of them is the real one. And, we're almost done. And elsewhere, in the Padma Purana, we find this statement. O Ambarish, if you wish to end your material existence, then every day you should hear the Bhagavatam that was narrated by Shukadev. And you should also recite it yourself. And in the Skanda Purana, yet another reference that says, finally we find the following statement in the Prahlad Samhita of Skanda Purana. A person who stays up on the night of Ekadasi and recites Srimad Bhagavatam with devotion before the deity of Hari. Well, that's not Devi Bhagavat. goes to the Lord's abode along with his family members. Okay, so now here's the summary. From these multiple Puranas that are speaking about the characteristics of Srimad Bhagavatam, here's the five that are shared with Devi Bhagavat. It begins with Gayatri Mantra. It narrates the slaying of Vritrasura. It has 18,000 verses. It has 12 cantos. And it includes the story of Prahlad. Similarities end. Describes the Hayagriva Brahmavidya. Devi Bhagavat doesn't do that. Recounts the histories of humans and demigods who lived during the Saraswat Kalpa, or Shweta Varaha Kalpa. That's the day of Brahma that the mode of goodness is prevalent, or the first day of Brahma. Spoken by Shukadeva, Devi Bhagavat doesn't. A narration related to Lord Vishnu, or a Vaishnav literature. Devi Bhagavat doesn't do that. Here's, Devi Bhagavat is an Upapurana. That means it has less than five subject matters. It has 18,000 verses, lots of glorification of Devi. And it begins the very first verse with Dimahi. In fact, this Dimahi, that's an indicator of Gayatri, is there in the following way. Here's the verse. Vidyam cha Dimahi. Where the translation is, let us meditate on that primal energy, Devi, of knowledge who embodies all living beings. May she inspire our intelligence. There's Vritrasura. This is the slides that I couldn't find. There they are. So there's different Hayagrivas found in the scriptures. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a demon named Hayagriva. And what he did, was killed by Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu did this in a form where later he restored the Vedas back to Brahma. Hayagriva was, the demon was trying to steal the Vedas. And Hayagriva then delivered the Vedas back to Brahma. And when he did so, he did with the horse's head. Just like, you know, like this painting also shows. So there's a demon Hayagriva. There's the Lord Hayagriva. There's one of the nice paintings of this form of Lord Vishnu. And here's what I was looking for. There's Dadichi. There's his Dadichi head. And there's the horse's head. And he's giving this knowledge of the Vedas to these two twins, the Ashwini Kumaras, and there's Indra ready to come and cut his head off. But no problem, he puts his head back on and everything's nice. So, during this instruction session, Dadichi, through the medium of his horse's head, is giving these two, Prana Vidya, and Narayana Kavacha or Narayana Varma. Now here's what I was looking for. So here's the Ashwini Kumaras receiving Brahma Vidya from Dadichi. So the little history, these two twin brothers, they were sons of Vadava. Vadava was the daughter of the sun god Vivaswan and Sangya, who is also known as the river Jamuna, or Yami. So while Yami was wandering around on earth in the form of a mare, these two sons were conceived. They're twins, daughters of Sangya, of Vadava. Excuse me, daughter of Vadava, that was the daughter of Sangya. Okay, so there we go. This is the scriptural reference from Canto 6, Chapter 9, where it says, I mean the translation, Dadichi gave Ashva Shira mantras. Now, Ashva means horse, and Shira means head. So Hayagriva also means head, and Ashva Shira also means head, horse-headed. So here's the next verse. He who was called Horsehead. That's Dadichi. Because there's different Hayagrivas or horse. You know, so the demon, the personality of Godhead Vishnu, and the Brahmana, Dadichi, who instructed Brahmavidya, he who was called Ashvashira. Hayagriva has the same meaning. So, there's, in different texts, it's not always is he called Dadichi, he is sometimes called Dadyansha, but it's the same person. Okay, so we're finished with this section. Conclusion is these nine items, these are with Devi and Bhagavatam. These are only with the Bhagavatam. And so now we know when the Bhagavatam is glorified, which Bhagavatam we're meaning. Now, for all of us, we know what Bhagavatam is. No problem. But you may, or at least Jiva Goswami did, during his time, there were a bunch of people who had a very different idea than what all of us have. And we may meet them. And so if we meet them, or some scholar comes along and says, how do you know? Well, you can just say, well, Prabhupada said so. That's how I know. I never thought otherwise. And they'll go, you know, you sentimentalist. They may not say it, but they'll. So now we're prepared to know what the Puranas say about the Bhagavatam and its glories. Which one is it? It's the one that's spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, where Brahma Vidya is given by Dadichi. And, you know, these other items that are mentioned in the list. It's describing the activities of human beings and demigods during the Sweta Varaha Kalpa, or when the white boar incarnation appears. And it's narrations related to Lord Vishnu. In other words, it's a Vaishnava literature. That's the qualification the other Puranas are using to glorify that Bhagavatam, that Purana that's the best, which is part of the whole section. Srimad Bhagavatam is the best Pramana. Okay. I wish I could have gone slower, but the clock didn't slow down. Any discussion? You have a? Oh, are you ready? Yes.
About the first sloka of Srimad Bhagavatam.
About the which one?
First sloka of Bhagavatam.
First sloka.
Is the Gayatri mantra there, Satyam?
No. It's implied by the word Dhimahi, and its meaning is explained in the text.
So, in the sloka, the Gayatri mantra is not there.
Yeah, that was the same question, and the answer is no, it's not there.
So, it is a reference to Brahma Gayatri mantra, is it?
By the word Dhimahi.
Okay.
And what is what's the meaning of Gayatri Mantra? It's in the text itself. I'm repeating myself now. Okay. Yes, Mahamantra.
Guru Maharaj, like Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra.
Yes.
So, and it is narrated by Sukadeva Goswami.
No. Well, the Bhagavatam 111 isn't. The Bhagavatam is narrated by Shukadeva Goswami and is compiled by Vyasadeva.
Yes.
Is that where the trick question you were going to get into?
Yes.
I thought so.
Okay. That's clear.
Okay. Gotcha.
And then...
It's called the Stump the Swami question. I could tell it coming before he even came out.
And the second part is like, what makes the portion of Vedas treated as a Purana. Like, is it a narration?
Yes.
That makes it a Purana,
no.
A category of Purana.
No, there's the category of Purana, it must cover 5 subjects to be a Purana and 10 to be a Mahapurana. And it's, it includes descriptions of some things. Now, some of them are prose and some of them are poetry.
Okay.
But that's not a requirement, but it covers those topics. Okay?
Thank you.
Some are in certain meter, some aren't. Flexible. So, someone want to carry the microphone? Thank you.
Maharaj, Gautam Rishi was speaking with Ambarish. Is that the same Gautam Rishi of the...
I assume so. I don't know. I can't confirm that. I just assume so.
I was appreciating how Srimad Bhagavatam is such an amazing literature. And that
it's amazing.
It's so explicit and accessible. Compared to Gayatri Mantra. My question is meditation on the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam equivalent for one who's not, let's say, second initiate?
Oh, yeah.
Equivalent to the Brahmana initiate meditating on
yes.
The Gayatri Mantra?
Yeah, it's the meaning of Gayatri Mantra.
It has the same spiritual potency.
It has the same spiritual potency. It doesn't have the same form, but it's like... here's a little Prabhupada story. When the devotees first got the printing press, the ISKCON press, whatever you call those, there's certain adjectives, something something press. So the person in charge of the press had an idea. He presented to Prabhupada. Would it be okay to print a Bhagavad Gita, just the verses that you could carry around in your pocket and from time to time pull it out and then recite the verses and put it back in your pocket. It'd be very convenient. That'd be okay. Prabhupada said no. And his explanation why was there are many translations of Bhagavad Gita and they don't so much differ in the verses. They differ in the meaning of the verses. And how are people going to understand the meaning of the verses without the purports? We said no. So, it's the one who chants Gayatri Mantra, it's having received it through disciplic succession, even if we don't exactly know what the meaning of it is, there's a potency in that, receiving that. Now, anybody can, we may not know what the meaning is, but we should learn what the meaning is. And meditate on the meaning while we chant the mantra. And the meaning can come directly from the 111 Bhagavatam, which then the rest of the Bhagavatam is an expansion. So we just study the Bhagavatam. And that will help us become qualified to become receivers of Gayatri Mantra and then enter into the chanting of Gayatri Mantra properly. One helps the other. One helps the other. Anything else?
Guru Maharaj.
Oh.
Thank you very much for preparing our faith with these wonderful discussions and also helping us communicate the faith to others. One question that I had was in relation to the Purva Paksha that you started off with.
Could you keep the microphone over there? Yeah.
Where you mentioned that... that the other proponents of the sutras or other teachers would not accept the Vedanta Sutra, and so how is it that they
There's
will be
two
accepting?
Things. Some have other sutras. They have their own sutras, and some that accept Vedanta Sutra, they have their own renderings of Vedanta Sutra, and they disagree with each other. Both. Now?
Okay, I didn't fully understand at that point. Okay, that makes it clearer.
Okay, so we're all set?
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Maharaj, I would like to understand what is it means by natural commentary and the commentaries of our...
Natural means the author himself. That's very natural. You know, let's say, Prabhupada's example is, you know, the book Sajahan. And then people would speculate why he called the book Sajahan. And Prabhupada said, just ask the author why he called it Sajahan. He'll tell you. That's very natural. So if we want to know what Vyasadeva meant when he wrote Vedanta Sutra, ask Vyasadeva what he meant. That's natural. Like that, natural. The other is unnatural.
One more follow-up question, Maharaj. What is the necessity to write the commentaries on Vedanta Sutra again by different, like sampradayas, they write?
Well, the purpose, here's a good question. The purpose is, each of the sampradayas has a certain perspective on, let's say, the Vaishnav sampradayas, on worship of the Supreme. So, to express their perspective, the frame of that perspective comprehensively comes by commenting on the verses of Vedanta Sutra. So, the followers of Ramanujacharya have their bhasya, their commentary on Vedanta Sutra. It explains their perspective, or specifically Ramanujacharya's perspective. And everyone following him must adopt that perspective. They may express this or that, but it has to be in the... So, and then over here, there's Madhvacharya. He worships the Supreme Lord with a particular perspective. And the comprehensive way of expressing that perspective is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, etc. That's why they do it. They accept the as, they accept Vedanta Sutra, they have a perspective. Or darshan. On, you know, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Because Vedanta Sutra has those divisions also. There's four parts. The first two are Sambandha, and then Abhideya and Prayojana. So our, as followers of Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, whoever, our perspective on Sambandha is this, our Abhideya is that, and our Prayojana is whatever it is. In terms of Vedanta Sutra, that's like, you know, the frame of reference. Is that all right?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj.
And it's specifically what those great acharyas, the primary preceptor of a sampradaya does. They take all these teachings that are, you know, miscellaneous, and they put it in a very comprehensive form. Systematically and comprehensive. Same language. Following Vedanta Sutra. Because that's the frame of reference. That's their gift. That's what makes them the acharya for that sampradaya. And it is authoritative for the entire sampradaya. Anyone that's a Sri Vaishnava must line themselves up with Ramanujacharya's Sri Bhasya. They must. Or they're not a Sri Vaishnava. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Guru Maharaj, you mentioned two or three times that the Vedas are indirect about mentioning about the Supreme. The message of the Vedas is more indirect, whereas the Puranas is direct and foundational.
Because the Bhagavatam says it, yeah.
Bhagavatam itself says that the Lord likes such indirect descriptions.
How so?
I can't tell you the reference, but it says that the Lord is very happy when He's indirectly glorified.
Well, He likes the Vedas. He doesn't dislike the Vedas. He's the source of them.
No, in preference to direct glorification.
I don't know what you're... You have shown me some references and we can discuss it. Because you may mean it in a certain way or certain context that I'd have to see the reference.
Okay. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, when we started our session today, the first slide where we were talking about Puranas, that they are Apurusheya, Puranas and Vedas.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking, this is the 28th cycle of Manu, and we discussed that within 1,000 times in a day of Brahma, every time these yeah. Vedas are manifested.
Correct.
And this time Jiva Goswami is saying that this is an Apurusheya, not a human form, not through a human.
Well, that's qualified.
Yeah.
You didn't get it completely correctly. Okay. Let's go back and edit a little bit. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Because the frame of the question may take away the question. The other 999, they're Shaktyamesh avatars.
That was my question, because they're all Jiva Tattvas, Brahma, Narada, and then Parashar Muni. They're all Jiva Tattvas. So then in other yugas also, the Srimad Bhagavatam, is it in Purana, is it Apurusheya or Purusheya?
They're Apurusheya. When to do that service, they have to be empowered.
Right.
You know, an ordinary fellow cannot do it. It's a Shaktivesh function. They get, you know, Lord Hari's Shakti to do it. Otherwise they can't do it. So it's a Purusheya because of that reason.
But
when they do it. So now what's special? If it's, you know, Shaktivesh or Vishnu Tattva, Jiva Tattva or Vishnu Tattva, what does it matter? They have the potency of the Supreme Lord. One could argue like that. Because they're both a Parusheya, Parusheya or Parusheya. What's the problem?
But this time we really emphasize that Krishna Dvaipana Vyas is Narayan himself.
Yes, that's special.
But then in other yugas it will be called as Apurusheya because they are
yes.
empowered.
You're correct.
I have one more thought, and I don't know how to frame it, but this has been going on in my mind. In June, when you gave Tattva Sandarbha seminar about 1.7.4, and
yeah.
we discussed today also Apashyat Purusham Purnam,
yeah.
and we said Vedvya saw Lord Krishna, Radharani, and a whole spiritual world.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
That is nice, very nice. But and then I'm thinking that we know the difference between Vishnu and Lord Krishna. And today again, we touched a little bit on it, that Vishnu has 60 of those
qualities,
and Krishna has 64 of those. Please excuse me if this is not right, but my thinking is that all the big devotees, Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva, or Amrish Maharaj, everyone saw Lord Vishnu.
They are pure devotees too.
They are pure devotees too. And the only Vedvyas, and the mind, in my mind coming, is Ramananda Rai, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed him Radha and Krishna. And these are the two places where Krishna is mentioned, but otherwise pure devotees, they have only seen Lord Vishnu.
No, that's not correct. The examples you have referred to, out of that limited number, it's correct. But there are many, 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 many that have seen Krishna, Radha and Krishna. Many, many, many. Not just Ramananda Roy.
And then I'm also connecting it with that. During that time, you said that Sridhar Swami said that all the Purusha avatars, they have been given an upadhi because of the connection with the material world, even though they are not directly involved in that.
This is very technical, but go ahead.
So that's why I'm thinking they are a little lower, and we know that, and we know there is a difference between Vishnu, Mahavishnu, and Krishna, but then why is it? You already answered that. There are many instances.
Many. Join them. Through association. Not like, you know, you're big and Prahlad Maharaj and Ambarish Maharaj are small. They're pure devotees. We don't minimize their devotion at all. That would be an offense.
Right.
There's great fortune in getting the association of those who, like the goddess of fortune, came to know of the rasa dance, wished to participate in the rasa dance, and was unable to participate in the rasa dance as long as she was thinking of herself as the goddess of fortune. But to change that from Aishwarya Bhav to the mood of the residents of Vrindavan requires the mercy of the residents of Vrindavan. That's very special. And, you know, we have received mercy from our founder Acharya, who is carrying that mercy. Just stay at his lotus feet and you're in good place. And don't make offenses.
Yes, I'll try.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. Srila Madhupati in the back. Can someone carry the microphone to Madhupati in the back? It's 9:30. We're going to make this our last question.
I had a quick question on the follow-up of that question. Aren't the pure devotees satisfied in their relationship with the Supreme Lord? Just like we hear about Hanumanji.
Yeah.
From Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Narad Muni comes and says, accompany me to the Yadavas, I believe, or the Pandavas.
Pandavas, yes.
Yeah. And Hanumanji says, no, I'm, though he knows that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he's satisfied in worshipping Sita.
Yeah, he's satisfied.
So, wouldn't in the same way, Prahlad Maharaj or everybody else in the...
Did you capture that, Shalini? You captured his reply? One is feeling a sense of fullness. Prahlad Maharaj, offer him, hey, how would you like such and such? And, you know, he's just a Nrisingha Bhakta. He doesn't want to go somewhere and, you know, become something other than a Nrisingha Bhakta. Hanuman, he's not only quite content, offer him anything, and he just wants to glorify Ram. Those persons are fully satisfied in their position, pure devotees. We're going to end. It's time to end. You can come and speak after. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.